Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today we have back on Anthony Waldachuk. Anthony, welcome back.
It's good to be back. How are you doing today, Eric?
Pretty good, pretty good. So I wanted to discuss tower properties today.
Right on. That sounds good to me. I'm ready to go here. So just give you a little bit of history on the background, or
please.
How'd you like to...
Yeah, start with the history.
All right. Well, let's see here. Well, I mean, first off, I mean, the one thing that catches your attention is the share price being $21,550.
I think it's even higher. What is it today? Oh, yeah, $21,550. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I'm the second to last purchase on that. I bought one share at $21,551 last week. So, you know, it does move quickly. So I think that's the caveat that we have to throw out.
I think it's just our little cult. They're like the only people that buy shares.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not quite as bad as Pendrell is. I mean, that's at, what, $150,000 a share. But
does that still trade after that reverse split?
There's a few guys that still own it. I owned shares, you know, before I got forced out. And,
right,
but
I got forced
taken
out too.
But which is funny, because we got forced out at a price of $170,000 a share when you do it, when you reverse the math.
And what's that
and
now?
And now it's... It's 150.
Okay.
So anyone that had to hold is on the wrong end of the stick there. So anyway, hopefully Craig McCaw achieved what he needed to do. But anyway.
Well, you have a spare $150K lying around to buy a share.
Exactly. With no idea what the heck they're going to go buy to use up those net operating losses. So
right.
Much better management here at Tower Properties, though. So at that price, you're looking at right now, there's about 4,157 shares out there. I mean, a whopping number, of course, which gives them a market cap of about $89.5 million. So it's not the small slam dunk it was, you know, 5-10 years ago when it was trading at half of that. So it has traded up a bit. However, as you might well imagine, real estate in and around the Kansas City and St. Louis area has probably not quite doubled, but has gone up substantially as well. Anyway, just to give you an idea as to, you know, how this thing all kind of came to fruition. Originally, back in 1990, Tower and Commerce Bank shares merged together. These were both backed by the Kemper family of Kansas City. And you might have heard of them through Kemper Mutual Funds, Kemper Life Insurance, so on and so forth. Anyway, they were the ones that originally started Commerce Bank shares probably a good 100 years ago. Oddly enough, they also started UMB, if you're familiar with that bank as well. The founding father of those two banks had one son assigned to each one of them and basically put them in competition with each other. So anyway... Hedging back to the Commerce Bank shares story here, in 1990 they merged together. What ends up happening is that Commerce technically just takes over Tower, and then they go ahead and hand out shares of Commerce Bank to the former Tower shareholders, as well as something called the Tower Acquisition Company, which they then renamed the Tower Properties, which is what you have today, with assets of about 17-18 million bucks, from what I recall. Anyway, just buildings that they had on their balance sheet, I guess. Anyway, what they end up that they've done then, as they do now, is they own managed properties in and around Kansas City and St. Louis. It's across three different counties, two in Kansas and one in Missouri, St. Louis County. 93% of their revenues are rental income off of all their commercial and residential properties that they own. They do have a little bit of some industrial, some raw land, as well as a little bit of as well as a little bit of development and management stuff. But by and large, rental income is where they make their money. Since they have such a small footprint, they don't employ that many people, a grand total of about 59, 53 of which are full-time. And occupancy rates are probably, on a whole, probably in the low 90% area. They do take pride in their properties. They're not, I'd say they're not all Class A, but they do, as you might imagine, they're a lot older stuff there. But, you know, they do, you know, Class B and up, probably, and they do keep their places fairly full. I mentioned ownership. The Kemper family holds, I think, north of 75% of the shares in this thing. So, you know, there's always that overriding problem that there might be a take under. I don't think they do that, as they're a fairly well-regarded family in the Midwest. So, you know, once you've made your nut, why ruin your name? You know, so you know, I think that it does seem to work. They do work symbiotically with Commerce Bank shares in the sense that their home office is actually in the Commerce Bank Share Trust building in downtown Kansas City. If you want to see a picture of it, look at my I think I posted pictures of it on my Twitter feed. If any and everyone out there follows me, I'm at Darkfire Capital out there on Twitter land. So sometime in
send
February,
me send me a link to those tweets and I'll put them in the show notes.
Oh, okay, cool. But yeah, no, it's an old style building, you know, as you might imagine, with you know, granite and marble floors and everything else. So it's a pretty substantial. It's pretty substantial place. So if you did want, you know, anyone who wants to take a look at the properties that they do own, towerproperties.com is their website. They're pretty forthright with everything that they have out there. They list basically everything they have, along with pictures of all the properties that they do have under management and or own. If you look in their annual report, which is, you can find on their site, or you can go to otcmarkets.com, look under the ticker symbol TPRP, and you can dial it up pretty easily over there. And they'll even tell you how much each property is carrying in debt, as well as principal, and what the interest rate is on each one of the notes on each property. So they're very, very transparent, which is kind of odd for what you might find out there on OTC markets. So across the, it looks like roughly about 23 buildings in their portfolio right now, which comes out to be about probably something close to or north of 4 million square feet of property, of which over that's about six included in that's over 1,600 doors in multifamily.
And how long have these buildings been on the books for?
A lot of them have actually been depreciated down to zero. And okay, that's the allure here, is that is the amount of depreciation that they carry on these things. So it's, you know, right now, as far as like what they carry on the rental property net is about $185 million, but it's substantially higher than that. Now, it's kind of anyone's guess as to what they're actually worth. One thing I was thinking about
doing. But you said the market cap is what, like 80? You said 85 million market cap?
Right. Yeah, it's 85 million market cap. I mean, they do carry, they do list rental, their property net is 185 million, but versus that, they do carry about 156 million in notes against that. So, okay. So it is fairly leveraged from that perspective. You probably do have retained earnings of something in the $52 million range. So, you know, if you're just looking to comb through and do a, you know, this is where you're going to miss the value here, is that if you're, you know, just looking through Bloomberg and doing a screen, you're going to see something trading at a little bit, you know, north of two times, or a little bit south of two times tangible book, whereas it probably trades less than book, to be honest with you.
And do you think it deserves a premium to book?
Probably not.
Yeah.
That being said, this isn't Manhattan, downtown Manhattan.
We're talking about the Midwest and areas that are notoriously actually quite stable for real estate markets.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is certainly, in the tortoise versus the hare, this is the tortoise. So, yep. Sometimes you can be in recessions, not non-primary markets can get shaken out pretty quickly. But when you look at the entire, center belt of the country going back to, say, 2008, Texas straight on up the gut of the country really didn't get kicked in the shins as hard as the coast did, if you think about it. So, rents stayed about the same. There was a little bit of a step back in prices, but it really wasn't that bad for them because there just really hasn't been most of the companies there just aren't that speculative. Granted, there's the southern part there, of course, you have oil and gas, which is a whole different ball of wax. But, they're in and around Kansas City. I think that, you're looking at insurance and professional concerns that they're running to.
What kind of cap rate is this?
I'd say, as far as like the what they're getting, as far as rents are concerned on these things?
Yeah.
I'd say, roughly speaking, it's 7 to 8% which compared to what I see out here in San Diego at 1.5%, is spectacular. But they could probably get a little bit more out of their out of the residential than they do out of the commercial, I think. And I think that's where they've actually been doing a little bit of what little development they do is in apartments. They just recently made a 299-unit apartment complex that they developed and designed and built from the ground up a couple of years ago. So they haven't done anything up late, though. I think the most recent purchase that they did was a they just bought a building out in roughly a year ago. Yeah, no, August 1st of 2018, looks like. Leawood, Kansas. They paid $8.5 million. They paid something closer to about 20, but the loan itself was $8.5 million, 10-year non-recourse, at 5%.
Why don't they structure this as a REIT?
The thing is, with the REIT, they would actually have to pass through all the income, and with the Kempers actually owning 75% of it, I don't think they want to see the income from this.
Got it.
So what ends up happening when you own these things, in the C corp that they have it in, is you also notice that if you look at their income statement, the thing really trades at what I would say fairly richly. It's like, I'd say about 30 times earnings. So, again, you're not going to see, you're screening for
using earnings for a company with just properties is not going to be very accurate.
Right. So you're going to want to look more toward the, funds from operations or free cash flows. They're going to term it here rather than FFO for a REIT. But and then also depreciation, amortization that you're going to get off of this thing. So
what's the price to FFO right now?
It's about, let's see here, about, yeah, wrote down fairly decent yield. It's about 7. Let's see, it's got about 10% right now. It's free cash flow share about 10 times or about 10 per, good for about 10% free cash flow yield.
Okay.
So it's
But do you really think it should be worth more than that, though?
Yeah, well, if you look around at other properties right now, in relative terms, the thing does trade fairly good. It's, you know, if as far as like where
I mean, you could buy Brookfield, you know, at 10 times mm-hmm. FFO.
Right. Well, I was going to say that'd probably be a discussion for another day, to be honest with you. I have a very difficult time figuring out what Brookfield does and how they break down
different
all
episode.
Their earnings. It's a very odd, they've been a very odd duck ever since their brand scan days, for yeah. instance. So, you know, but you know, one way to kind of look at this is like, you know, what is it valued per share? You know, where would we want to value this? You know, the one way, say, you know, to give a tip of the hat to Dave Waters over at OTC Adventures, the way he phrases this is, you know, he was looking at this a few years ago and say, well, where should this be? It's like, yeah, roughly speaking, like 12 times net operating income less cost, which, you know, puts you around like roughly $33,000 per share. That's as of a year ago. I think that might be a little aggressive, to be honest with you. I think it's probably worth somewhere in the $30,000 range.
Now, if interest rates go up, though, is that going to impair the value quite a bit?
They only have about $9 million coming due this year and maybe $11 million next year. So they could probably refinance fairly easily. They have a line of credit right now with Commerce Bank of $13.5 million. Which is backstopped by about how many shares? They actually, on their books, they also own about $10 million. And take that back, call it $11.5 million worth of Commerce Bank shares on their books. So, you know, and plus they also have $10 million in cash on hand. So if any one of these properties does need to be refinanced, they do have a line of credit, Commerce Bank shares, as well as cash on hand, which they can tap into. That being said, Commerce Bank shares does back them on most of their loans. So they think their official line is that they think that Commerce Bank would actually step in and refinance them on most everything that they would be doing out there because they're very much attached to it at the hip. The Kemper family sits on the board of Tower Properties. The Kemper family sits on the board of Commerce Bank shares. So you can see how this kind of all kind of works together, positively and or negatively, depending on what your point of view is as far as like families owning way too much of it. So
how have they treated shareholders over time?
They're pretty good. They buy back shares on a regular basis. For instance, Tower
does,
yes.
There's enough liquidity to do that?
They do. What they do is they'll every couple of years they'll run a Dutch tender offer out there.
Okay.
Their most recent one was December 2017. They bought back a whopping 28 shares at $20,000 per share.
Wow, 28 shares.
Yeah. Well, when you only have
like, I know, it's just 40, it's funny.
4,200.
It's just funny. It's just funny when you say that, right? Dutch tender,
yeah, exactly.
Tender of 20, we tender 28 shares.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, and the funny thing is, it's like, well, hell, no one else wanted to tender shares even at that price. So they originally started at 17,000 and then they upped it to 18 and then they finally settled at 20 because they couldn't get anyone to tender their shares. As far as dividends are concerned, they haven't paid one in a while. They're a very infrequent and chunky distribution. Yeah, exactly. Or maybe it's like whenever they need money, they'll have a special dividend. Right. So looking back to, you know, 2012, they did pay a $2,065 dividend on the stock. So and then there was another one a few years previous to that. But by and large, I think that they just like to buy back shares as being the value add for shareholders here. As far as more recently, they did buy back one director shares at a couple months ago at I think what was the most recent last price on this thing, so around $21,500 roughly speaking. I do know from personal experience one of my friends had to sell some shares back to them, so he called up Stan Weber, the CFO, and said, hey, do you buy them back directly? He says, absolutely. We can match last price. And no haggling, no nothing. Just said, we'll match last price. And no questions asked. They bought them back from them. So,
why are they public still?
They probably, I'm not sure exactly why commerce wouldn't just buy them wholeheartedly.
Right.
I have a funny feeling that they just like to keep the property division separate from the banking division, if you will. I think that, you know, over the years, I think that the Kempers have gotten into other things, like, you know, like I said, you know, mutual funds, insurance, so on and so forth. Railroads, if you want to go back 100 years. And they've had their strongest with banking. And I think that they just went, you know what, we're just going to set this off to the side. We have a different management team that handles tower properties. They have, you know, one, Tom Willard is the CEO of the company, but I think, and he also is on the board of directors, but the one guy, I think the guy that really makes Tower run is this guy, Stanley Weber, who has been with them for years. He was the CFO, secretary, and treasurer for a long time, and recently was just named president of the company. Longtime Kansas guy, CPA, very deep roots there. So much so, this is a good story. He was quarterback at Kansas State from 80 to 84. And for all one of you that listens to Kansas State football, he's been the color guy for the last 32 years for their football broadcasts. And he also does Kansas State basketball too. So he's not one to have his name smeared by doing anything funny here. So he's a most upstanding guy. So which kind of brings us to, you know, quality of management for over-the-counter companies. And it, you know, it's really important to have, you know, what's his, is it Ian Cassell, I think, fanatical, the fanatical, leaders guy, really important that you have guys that are top-notch individuals who lead the company and are upstanding in the community and, as well as in financial matters that aren't going to cheat you. And if it's, this is probably a really, you know, the way I view it, it is my top holding out of all my stocks I own. I'm, you know, for those of you that know me, I'm a real estate guy. And this is kind of my way of getting into, you know, Midwest real estate with a reasonable cost and people who will manage and take care of it without, you know, overcharging me, without charging me a arm and a leg, if you will. So, I do think
what are their salaries like?
It's a fairly, fairly nominal amount of money that that everyone pulls. You know, if you look at, SG&A, looking at $2.1 million for the year 2018. So general administrative and other. So it's not really a operating expense is $6.7 million. So, you know, board salaries, hard to say. They don't really share that in their annual report, unfortunately. So I would guess that, you know, we're probably looking at $100,000 to $300,000 bucks tops, though.
Okay.
The Kemper family themselves, they make all their money over on the banking side of things. The rent that they pay is pretty much normal for what you would pay in their building. They say that they don't cut them any deals, if you will, to rent out the their office space in the Commerce Trust building. So it's all expenses are all fairly reined in, if you will. This is not Bank of the Ozarks, shall we say?
Okay, got it. Interesting.
But it's not really not very exciting, unfortunately. But you know, there's a, if you look over a corner of Fairfax and Berkshire, there is a, you know, there is a thread on it, maybe five pages, four of it. It's two guys bickering about whether or not they should be expensing or capitalizing expenses. So, you know, they do put a lot of money into their into their buildings, which they take versus the rents they take in. And so income tax is fairly nominal that they actually pay every year, but they do have, you know, they do get hit with property taxes, you might imagine. So same reason why I'm in real estate myself. So that's try to keep the tax payments going out.
Why do they not split the stock? Do they not want shareholders?
Yeah, I think it's the reporting. So, like as you mentioned, it's like when you say, you know, well, how much does the CEO make? Can't honestly tell you, but you know, if you called up Stan Weber, he'd probably tell you right off the top of his head exactly how much everyone makes, because he's pretty stand up guy. But if you look at 2006 and 2009, I mean, 2006 is when they did a 1-for-50 reverse split. And then 2009, they did an additional 1-for-30 reverse split.
So maybe they're just slowly taking it private.
Yeah. Well, they want to make sure that they stay under 300 shareholders so they don't have to report. Right. I mean, of course, things that, you know, that's always subject to change. You know, like you said, you know, why aren't they bought out? You know, I couldn't really tell you. But for the time being, you know, all the metrics that are on it, I'm happy to be a shareholder in this thing. You know, fair value probably is, you know, 30,000-ish. That's my personal opinion. I can't really tell. I am a shareholder, so, you know, take that for what you will. But, you know, it's still a decent value in this day and age. I wouldn't say it's screaming, but for someone looking to put money into Midwest real estate, a reasonable multiple, and, you know, have it run by, you know, upstanding management team, I'd recommend it.
Anthony, well, thank you. And okay. If people want to contact you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
You can direct message me through Twitter, Darkfire Capital, @DarkfireCapital. You can also email me directly, darkfirecapital@gmail.com. Either way, I have a pretty quick turnaround, and want to yell at me or share notes, more than happy to converse and go back and forth with you.
All right, Anthony, thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Right. Thank you very much, Eric. Talk to you soon.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.